Hello, I'm David Harmon.
And I'm Maria Goner.
And we are the Employment Strategists.
And we're excited to welcome you to the very first installment of our podcast,
The Unsolicited Kiss.
So, as the title might suggest, today we're talking about harassment in the workplace, more specifically, sexual harassment in the workplace.
What prompted this episode was the recent incident where the Spanish soccer coach kissed the player who scored the winning goal at the trophy ceremony. And that created a worldwide backlash on social media. The coach was suspended and ultimately fired.
The most surprising thing to me about that occurrence was the fact that he even did it in the first place. After what we've seen throughout the Me Too movement, I would think that someone in his position at this point would know to keep his hands and lips to himself.
I think that runs to the very nature of the training of any organization. There were probably policies that were not necessarily communicated adequately, both at the senior and rank and file level, which would have made any person who was employed by the Spanish Soccer Federation aware of what behavior was permissible and what behavior was not permissible.
You're 100% correct. During this backlash, a lot of soccer players came forward and said he has acted in a similar manner throughout his career and it has been looked past and accepted for years.
It may very well be that people who were subjected to his treatment, his inappropriate conduct, did not file complaints. It's very possible that the human resources department at the Spanish Soccer Federation was not adequate to receive those complaints and did not adequately investigate if they were notified of any type of issue.
Absolutely. And we know from the perspective of liability for any employer, the history of conduct by the offender would be looked at to determine whether or not the one incident is enough to establish harassment. It's a totality of the circumstances factor. So with all of this in mind, let me ask you, do you think or are you seeing that we're getting more harassment cases or less?
Yes, we are getting more cases because the more notoriety that these situations receive, the more people become aware of what their rights are in the workplace. Mm-hmm. And that's a critical aspect of that. So yes, we are seeing more cases where people are questioning the behavior and seeing that lines have been crossed mm-hmm. and then taking action.
Oh yeah, that's fair.
Now, one of the things that people who take action or who are the victims or the subject of unsolicited sexual harassment or unsolicited actions which rise to the level of sexual harassment, it's very difficult for that person to then step up and report.
Oh, of course.
And it's traumatic to experience it, mm-hmm. and then it's traumatic to report that. And one of the things that has to be taken into consideration is not only to help clean up and clean out the malfeasors who are conducting themselves inappropriately in the workplace.
Absolutely. And for the victims, right, even with the soccer player, her character was subjected to attack. And that happens a lot with people who complain in the workplace. Then they become the victim again because people attack their appearances, they attack their conduct. Did you encourage these remarks in some way, in some shape or form? All of that frequently happens where these people get victimized again. And I think the other thing that I would stress with respect to this particular incident is that this guy stole this player's moment. She scored the winning goal. It was a historic victory for the team. And now, when you Google her name, this is what comes up, that she was the victim of this unsolicited kiss, unsolicited sexual advance / semi-assault.
Yeah, and in fact, I have her statement, and her statement was that, "I want to clarify that, as seen in the footage, I never consented to the kiss he gave me. And of course, I never intended to lift the president in the air. I do not tolerate that my word is distrusted, and even less so, the inventions of words I never said." That's absolutely what happened to her. The moment was stolen. Maria, let's discuss the legal framework. What is sexual harassment in the workplace? There are two types, quid pro quo and hostile work environment. In most cases, quid pro quo sexual harassment occurs when a supervisor seeks sexual favors from a worker in return for some type of job benefit, such as a raise, better hours, promotion, or to avoid some type of detriment, such as a pay cut, demotion, poor performance, or termination.
By contrast, hostile work environment is created when an employee is subjected to intimidation, ridicule, insult that is sufficiently severe or pervasive to alter the condition of his or her employment and creates an abusive work environment. With quid pro quo, it's pretty straightforward and clear. I think the hostile work environment, though, is a little bit more complicated and not as clear. So I think it would be helpful if we discussed some of the examples of when hostile work environment is created.
Sure. There are cases that we have looked at, one specifically in New York, the Pawson case, and that discusses or lays the framework that states that all of the circumstances must be considered, including the frequency of discriminatory conduct, its severity, whether it was physically threatening or humiliating, or a mere offensive utterance, and whether it unreasonably interfered with an employee's work performance.
Mm-hmm. I think it's important to stress that when we look at all these factors, we have to look at whether or not to a reasonable person would be offensive. So we know on the one hand, trivial inconveniences or trivial comments and petty slights are not enough to constitute harassment. But then there is a spectrum of certain actions which, when taken in context, might constitute such harassment. And everything's extremely fact-specific, obviously. But what we wanted to talk about is when one instance, one thing that someone does, when that reaches that point.
Okay, Maria, so let's consider the situation where there's a coworker asking out a coworker, asking that coworker out on a date.
Mm-hmm.
That's a one-off. Ask that person out one time.
Right.
And then the other person says no.
Mm-hmm.
And then it stops.
Right, and it's not a manager, it's not anybody who has the power over the coworker, right? It's just same level, no influence. I would argue that that's an isolated minor act, right? An occasional episode, which generally would not be enough.
However, what if that person who's asking the other person out on a date persists? The person has said no,
mm-hmm.
but the person wanting the date is persistent,
sure.
and keeps asking and doesn't take no for an answer.
Yes.
But it's only asking out on a date. There's nothing more to it. It's just continuous request to go out on a date.
I think the continuousness of it takes it to the level of pervasive, right? Because it could be either severe or pervasive conduct that could alter the circumstances of one's employment. And, you know, I would argue I'm a reasonable person. I don't know, some might disagree. But if I was subject of constant asking out, I would probably be bothered. I would be, that's enough.
If you did not want to go out with the coworker and that coworker was persistent in asking you out, you would have a basis to report that person and that action to HR.
Yes, and one should definitely do that.
And then HR would have an obligation to investigate.
Yes.
Under the policies, most policies, and we can get into that later, but most policies would provide for an investigation
mm-hmm.
following the receipt of a complaint.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, under the law, an employee has the right to harassment-free environment. And when you're bothered by a particular conduct to such an extent that it alters what you do, I mean, again, if someone's constantly asking you out, are you going to then avoid that person? If a group of people is going out to lunch and then that person's there, are you going to avoid them? Probably. And if you're altering what you're doing day to day because of something that that person does, I think that's time to talk to HR.
Sure. If it has a deleterious effect on the workplace, on your feeling about your position in the workplace, it's absolutely a reportable incident
mm-hmm.
or incidents.
Definitely. All right. Let's take a look at another real life example. Now, this case is from the Fifth Circuit. And I will preface this by saying that I think that if this transpired in New Jersey, New York, maybe California, I think that there would be enough for the court to conclude that there was a hostile work environment. But in Texas, the court concluded and the Fifth Circuit affirmed that this was not sexual harassment. So here are the facts. The plaintiff complained that her female coworker has made comments about the shape of her body on a number of occasions. In addition, she's indicated that she would know what to do with a woman like plaintiff. She's shared some details about her sexual history and that she's asked the plaintiff whether or not she was bisexual and invited her out to go to a strip club together. So the trial level court and then obviously the Fifth Circuit, which affirmed this decision in 2023, concluded that this is not enough to be severe or pervasive to be actionable under Title VII for sexual harassment.
There is a wrinkle here, Maria, and that is if the court found that there was no sexual harassment in this fact pattern, but yet the company took retaliatory action against the complainant and fired her, that would expose the company to liability under the law.
yes, it would be a separate claim. It would be a claim for retaliation.
Yeah, an adverse employment action taken as a result of a complaint. So it's twofold. Not only is it important for companies to properly enforce their policies, but it is also important for them not to take an adverse action against an employee filing a complaint.
Based on these facts, it doesn't appear that the plaintiff was punished as a result of making any complaint, even if she made any. But if there were retaliation by the company as a result of the complaining, even though the underlying conduct by the employee does not constitute harassment, the actual retaliation would create a cause of action.
Right. But that has to be looked at by counsel in every jurisdiction, because the laws governing retaliation and adverse employment actions are state specific. We recognize the traumatic impact of a situation like that, and the person who is the target now has to make a decision as to whether or not they want to report that event and the potential exposure that that would have on the person's longevity at the company and future career. But these policies are in place to protect that very person from being subject to that type of treatment, and are designed to help ferret out the people who are going to be conducting themselves inappropriately in violation of policies.
Under the law, if an employee complains, they should be protected from retaliation, even if the underlying complaint did not have, let's say, legal merit. So for instance, if you believe that you were harassed, but the reality, the conduct does not rise to the level of actual harassment, but you complain nevertheless, your job should be protected from retaliation. Unfortunately, it doesn't always happen that way, but that's the law.
Right, and we've seen that in our cases where the action, the harassment, the reporting of the harassment, and then the adverse employment action taken by the company, almost as if they're ignoring the fact that this person reported,
mm-hmm.
and it's the retaliation that winds up getting the companies in trouble.
For sure.
And finding liability and damages resulting from that type of action after the incident has occurred,
mm-hmm.
after it's been reported, and then an adverse action takes
yes,
place.
Exactly. It's the action, like you said, it's the action that gets the company in trouble versus the actual underlying non-harassment.
The action itself is then initially the person committing that act. That's the person who's in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
But when the company takes an adverse employment action, now it rises to the level of impacting the company. In addition, the company has an obligation and a responsibility to make sure the policies are enforced and the person is trained.
Mm-hmm. And this is why one should have a handbook, don't you think?
A handbook is an absolute necessity in any employer-employee relationship.
Yeah, it's like a playbook. It tells you what to do and what to expect. And more importantly, if something bad happens to you, if something makes you uncomfortable, this is how you know what to do about it.
Provides guidelines as to what is sexual harassment, quid pro quo, or hostile work environment. What are the procedures for filing a complaint? And then, what are the procedures and steps taken by a company in terms of conducting its investigation as a result of that complaint?
You know, just as important as having a handbook is knowing what's in it. Do you know how many times I get employers calling me and asking me what to do? And my answer is, well, what does your handbook say? We don't know.
Maria, this reminds me of something a law school professor of mine said. He said, read the statute. Read the entire statute. And I would suggest that this carries forward with employee handbooks. Employers should know the contents of the handbooks they are issuing to their employees. They should read them fully. They should understand what their counsel has prepared, and they should be prepared to implement those policies. On the other hand, employees, upon receiving the handbooks, should make sure that they read them in their entirety and understand what is in them, understand what they are signing and acknowledging, having been given those policies within the handbook, and ask questions and make sure their questions are answered. Just issuing a handbook without knowing what's in it and not properly implementing it with training, with educating the employees, is a wasted effort.
All right, Maria, we talked about the unsolicited kiss, but let's talk about the CEO who walks around hugging people in the office.
Do you have anyone specific in mind, or is it just a general kind of...
He's a hugger.
Okay.
The person is just known as a hugger. And when people talk about, you know, Joe Smith, they say, he's the hugger.
Yeah.
Or watch out for him, he's a hugger.
Yeah.
Okay, so how should that be,
handled in the workplace?
So I think we got to break it down, right? Because every time we have to go back to the initial elements, right? Is this severe enough? Is the incident of one hug severe enough to alter one's condition of employment? What do you think?
It depends upon how the person on the receiving end of the hug feels.
Mm-hmm.
The reasonable standard.
Yeah.
Right? Reasonableness. How does that person feel? If the person's uncomfortable and backs away or avoids that person, then that's probably not appropriate in the workplace. But if the person's intent is only to be friendly and goes beyond just a handshake, it's really a matter of what the intent of that person's activities are. I think it's a fine line between acceptable versus unacceptable.
So your lawyerly answer is that it depends in a nutshell, right?
Yeah, it depends. All of these situations are fact specific.
Oh, for sure.
But I do think that if I was general counsel of a particular company and the CEO was walking mm-hmm. around hugging people and probably would hug me as well,
right.
I would advise that CEO not to do it anymore.
That's fair. I mean, I also think it kind of depends, to use a very technical term, on the mechanics of the hug, right? Like, where are the hands placed? How tight is this hug? I know I'm definitely overthinking this, but all of that will play a role into how the huggy feels about the hugger's actions.
I think that this has to do with, is the physical contact contact acceptable
mm-hmm.
or unacceptable?
Mm-hmm.
And in more instances than not, it's unacceptable.
Yes.
If it's someone who, it's between two friends or people who know one another, and they exchange hugs with one another, and it's part of their social interaction, that's not necessarily going to be something reported that either person is going to report to HR as a violation of policy. But if it's something where the person is going around and hugging everyone, that to me crosses the line overall.
Sure.
And I don't know if degree is necessarily, it's a hug. It's still a physical contact.
Yes.
We know if it's extreme and the person hugs and then drops his or her hands down and touches somewhere that's not typically touched in a hug.
It's not within the hug zone?
Outside the strike zone, correct. That absolutely crosses the line.
Oh, for sure. At this point, it's no longer a hug. That's just groping people. Now, our listeners might be or might not be surprised to learn that there actually are cases addressing unwanted hugs. The first case, which involved the proverbial John Smith who was walking around and hugging everybody in the office, and that is Zedvig versus County of Yolo out of the Ninth Circuit from 2017. The court held that a reasonable juror could find conduct severe under California law where there were unwelcome hugs on more than 100 occasions and at least one unwanted kiss.
So that goes to the severity of the action on the part of the actor.
Another example could be when the hug is unduly prolonged or sexualized in some way, intimidating or threatening.
And it's all a matter of the totality of the circumstances surrounding that hug. What is going on at that moment? What was the lead up? What is said? Where is the touching? How does it occur? And the frequency.
Yeah, absolutely. So actually, in one California case that is fresh off the presses, the appellate division held that plaintiff could not set forth a claim for hostile work environment where her complaints included two incidents where the supervisor hugged her instead of shaking her hand, as he did with male employees, and where that supervisor also made a joke towards this employee by saying that you need to stay off porn sites while working on the computer in the office. The district level court, as well as then the appellate court, said that these two instances, even if they were taken to be as true, are not enough because the plaintiff did not allege that any of the hugs that she was complaining about were sexualized or uncomfortable in any way. There was another allegation that the plaintiff made that the supervisor stared at her uncomfortably, but the court did not give that much consideration.
So again, these cases are fact-specific, as most cases are, and are reviewed against whether we have hostile work environment and or quid pro quo in the harassment context. So let's talk about another situation
sure.
having to do with a business trip. The basic facts of that case are that a senior exec and a junior employee traveled out of town for a business meeting and both stayed in separate hotel rooms. Somehow, the senior exec found his way into the junior employee's room.
This was while she was sleeping. I'm not quite sure how that happened, but it was while she was sleeping.
Yes.
And he got into bed with her
and
started to hug and kiss her.
Yes. So this is the type of hugging that definitely goes outside of the realm of permissible, right? I think there couldn't even be any dispute that that's harassment. And I think one would be very hard-pressed to argue that that singular incident is not enough.
I think that going into a hotel room, an unwelcome visit into a hotel room, right away, that crosses the line. The danger sign is flashing. But there's no question that any type of physical contact and getting into someone's bed in a hotel room is absolutely strictly harassment.
Oh, for sure. So I think frequently we get asked, what if the alleged harassment happens off the premises, right? Let's say there's a celebration and the office is at a restaurant or at a bar, and then the superior or a coworker makes a move on the employee. Does that make a difference that it's off the premises?
It's still within the work context and it's inappropriate, and that would cross the line.
For sure. So
That would absolutely be. If you look, any policy that we draft for sure would ring the alarm bell on that, at crossing the line for actionable harassment.
So the location itself is of no moment, whether it's on the property of the company versus elsewhere and even in the social setting.
It's context. Mm-hmm. It's context. It was a business purpose event.
Yep.
It was a firm or company sponsored event.
Yep.
That's a workplace harassment, even if it's not within the confines, the four walls, so to speak, of the office.
Okay, so because we are the employment strategists, we have a segment on this podcast in which we suggest some strategies for both the employers and the employees.
It's very basic for employers. Make sure your policies are up to date. Make sure your handbook, which contains those policies, is reviewed regularly, because the laws continue to change in this space. As recently as September, the EEOC came out with new harassment guidelines. So the guidelines, the case law, the statutes are continuing to change and evolve, and handbooks and policies have to be kept up to date. Training is very important. Training is a companion task for employers, training to dovetail with the policies and to make sure that those policies and training comply with the law.
In fact, in some states, training is required to be administered to employees under the law.
And beyond that, some states require the training to be interactive. So it's advisable to check with your counsel as to what that entails.
And from the employee perspective, I would document everything. Note-taking is extremely important. And complaining to HR is extremely important.
And when that complaint comes to HR, HR has to be well-versed and trained to know what to do with those complaints, including the proper way to investigate and then to resolve and address the issue that's been brought via the complaint.
And while this is not legal advice, we hope that you find our time together entertaining and informative. Please remember to get guidance of competent legal counsel for any legal issue that you might have.
If you'd like to continue the discussion, you can reach us at theemploymentstrategists@norris-law.com. Thank you for listening.
Oh my gosh, yes. Is this the actual case we wanted to discuss? Mm-hmm. Oh, for sure. Because it's no longer a hug at that point. That's just groping people, I think.
What prompted this episode was the recent incident where the Spanish soccer coach kissed the winning player, the player who scored the winning goal, rather, at the award ceremony, the trophy ceremony, and that created a worldwide backlash on social media and was suspended and ultimately fired.